Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. Do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a Magic Wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the Magic Wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades, and I've been obsessed with my Magic Wand. I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago, because now there are multiple iterations of the Magic Wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the Magic Wand Rechargeable, tiny with the Magic Wand Mini, or micro. Micro is really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure. Summer is definitely the sexiest season. I mean, think about it. The days are longer, the nights are hotter, and your sex life is too. And if you're looking to turn up the heat, how about a little help from our friends at Promescent? Summer is all about things hot and steamy, so I highly recommend you add something extra and tap into Promescent's lineup of pleasure-enhancing products. I've been singing their praises for years since they started, and for good reason. Because first up, we have the legendary Delay Spray. This is the MVP of lasting longer and keeping those eager penile nerves in check. You just do a quick spray, and you're set to outlast even the longest days of summer, ensuring the party doesn't end before you want it to. So you can have the mind-blowing climax you're now so very well equipped to reach, thanks to Promescent. It just helps you last longer without all the worry. And for women, Promescent's warming arousal gel is a fun pre-sex ritual. You just rub it into your vulva a few minutes before and you'll feel it start to tingle, warming up every nerve ending. So you'll feel that much more pleasure everywhere before you even get going. So it's kind of like the sure thing. So make sure this summer is the sexiest one yet. Check out promescent.com/Emily and get 15% off at checkout. You get free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee, discreet shipping, all the things. Promescent is your ticket to a more guaranteed good time. That's PROMESCENT.com/Emily. Promescent.com/Emily for your exclusive discount. Check it out.
In Chinese medicine, it's about heart and reproductive organs. Like, that's the basic thing. There's an extra vessel in Chinese medicine that connects our heart to our reproductive organs. And it's sort of like the liver energy in Chinese medicine opens to the eyes. So visually looking at your partner, kissing, the heart opens to the tongue. So really making out, the tongue.
Making out, again, like you used to.
Yeah, it goes into the uterus. It's connected. It's like this idea. So it's really about moving energy, right? So Taoist practices are about connecting heart and uterus and connecting energy. So we're circulating our energies and we're circulating our energies with our partner.
Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm joined by certified sex coach, clinic director of natural healing and acupuncture, and author of the new book, Conceiving with Love, Denise Wiesner, and all things you should and shouldn't do while trying to have a baby. Topics include, sex is supposed to be hot, but why does baby making tend to get so technical? Well, we give you tips to keep it sexy. How using Chinese medicine like herbs, acupuncture, and diet can help when trying to conceive. Breast massages and aromatherapy. I mean, it already sounds good, but why you should try it to get aroused. And natural and holistic hacks that heighten your senses and stimulate sex. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes. Call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's gotta have her standards. Oh, my.
The women know about shrinkage.
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com. Check out our podcast. We release 3 a week. So wherever you listen to podcasts, check them out. And you can find us on all social media across the board. It's at Sex with Emily. You can also find me Monday through Friday on SiriusXM Radio. It's on Starz Channel 109 from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific for even more awesome sex talk. You can also get a free trial at sexwithemily.com/SXM. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Denise Wiesner. And remember, even if you're not trying to conceive, there's a lot of great tips.
There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co.
And here for you. All right, I'm very excited to welcome my guest today, Denise Wiesner. She's a traditional Chinese medicine specialist, certified sex coach. She's a clinical director of natural healing and acupuncture and author of the new book, Conceiving with Love. She's over 25 years of practice, including yoga, acupuncture, and tantra. Here's the thing. She's helped thousands of people reconnect and ultimately conceive. Like, get pregnant and have the baby. Like, that has worked. She's thousands of couples. That's amazing. Her methods have been proven for couples using both Western medicine and those trying to conceive naturally. And when she's not working or teaching or writing, she plays guitar. She practices yoga. She danced. I feel like she's a dancer. She walked in. I'm like, we should twirl around. I'm spending time with Noah and Ethan, her 2 sons. So welcome to the show. Congratulations on your book. And I want to say one more thing before I let you talk. It's not like that, though. You can actually talk. But I'm not like a dictator. But what I loved about your book is even if you're, just want to tell you now that even if you're like, well, I'm not ready to conceive or I don't want to have kids, I thought that your book was such practical information for women and for couples just trying to connect and understand their sex lives. And it was like a lot of the tips that I give, but with like different spins on it and just really well written and well done. So I just think, I don't know, if you couple sex, you want to improve your sex life, you want to get through trauma, you want to understand East meets West sexuality practices, it's well done. Hello, Denise.
Hi, thank you so much.
Hi, I'm so excited to have you here and thank you for interviewing me for the book. That's when we met. We had like a friendship affair on Skype, and then we decided we were going to be friends, but she lives on the other side of the highway, but we're going to figure it out.
Yes, we are.
And welcome. So let's talk about like sex around pregnancy in general. Can we just start there? I get so many questions from people. They're like, the second you decide to get pregnant, sex is not fun anymore because it's like clock is ticking. Why does it become so unsexy when we're trying to conceive? What happens?
I think there's a lot of pressure for women, right? Because they have this like little window where they're ovulating. And I think also in today's society, people are so busy, right? Everyone's like so stressed out and they're working a lot. And sometimes the timing is like, you know, you just come home from work and you're tired and this is the one window you have. And then the husband comes home and he's tired and you're like, oh my gosh, we have to do this thing now. And people just don't, it becomes pressure and stressful.
It is stressful. So what do you tell people to do about that? To kind of, I know there's a whole process, but what would you tell them?
I kind of think it's important to have regular intimacy, right? I mean, it sort of starts in the morning. It's not just thinking of like, okay, come home, put it on. I think we have to sort of have regular sex all the time. But in Conceiving with Love, I talk a lot about like sort of setting the stage and doing things different. And there's this whole foreplay section.
Let's talk about your foreplay section. It's my favorite. As long as we're starting the sex show now, let's start with foreplay.
It's kind of like I have so many things to do, but I have this feng shui where I talk about like setting the room, you know, like where it makes it more intimate. Sometimes like, you know, there's like clutter, like my room.
I love that. I folded back the page here on that.
You did?
The bedroom. Yeah, because I think it's so great. Let's talk about it. Like people don't think about it. It matters, your room.
Right. You're you know, it's like if you have electronics in the bedroom, how many couples come home at night and they're like, oh my God, I got to send one more email. Oh my God, what did they say on the computer? And their electronics like follow them into the bedroom.
Right.
And so it's, you know, sort of the rule of like no electronics in the bedroom. And they also find that electronics don't do well with sperm. Like,
right. That's right? Huge.
Yeah.
If there's another reason, yeah, get the phone. And just like, you just give good tips for like the colors of the room and like how to make it. That's what I was saying. You really get into depth on a lot of the things that you're like, concepts that I've talked about for anybody, like even myself. I'm single, like making my bedroom really sexy right now. So it's like make the colors that you should have and taking the, you know, electronics out of the room. I think your bedroom should be for sleeping and for sex. So like, tell me about your typical like woman who comes to you and what happens. Like, is there a typical woman who comes to you and says, I'm ready to conceive, help me, or I've been trying?
Yeah,
what do?
I have a lot of couples that come to me and women that come to me. And sometimes it looks like I've had three failed IVFs and I don't know what to do. And I'm, you know, I'm desperate kind of. And I really, help me conceive. I heard Chinese medicine helps. And at that point, they've been doing so much medication and so much timed intercourse and ejaculation in a cup that those couples are really like the, sometimes that they bring the husband in, he kind of, we talk about sex and the husband is like, you know, they all sort of freeze and nobody wants to talk because they're not having any sex because they've been doing all these, there's just sex is equated with failed IVFs, really,
right, exactly.
And failed fertility. So that's one. And then I also have people that are trying naturally that just really want to get help and they don't know what to do and they don't know what to eat and they don't know, like, just the first thing about being healthy to conceive. So those are kind of my two groups.
So let's talk about Chinese medicine, how that plays a role as well, and everything that you do. It's acupuncture and also you give them herbs.
Yeah. I just kind of, Chinese medicine looks at the whole body. So I would evaluate them and look at what's going on with their emotional life, what's going on with their digestion, their sleep, their all their habits. You know, what's their cervical fluid like? You know, sometimes women don't even know that they're supposed to have this certain special cervical fluid during the ovulation window. And they never check themselves. And just kind of like the whole body. And then I deal with what's out of balance. And I might do acupuncture. In fact, I mostly do acupuncture,
right.
Chinese herbs, nutrition, talk about like foods that might be, you know, let's say I have a patient who it runs really hot, like really super, super hot all the time. I might cool them down, or a woman who's like cold all the time, which is more typical.
Right.
Freezing, and they're eating like ice cold blendeds and they're eating salads and raw food. I might change their diet so that we say have a warm uterus, you know,
yeah.
So they have more blood flow. So it just depends on what's going on.
Do you check them each time they come in? Like, do you check their blood pressure? You check, what do you do when they come in? Their tongue?
Yeah, I look at their tongue and check their pulse and kind of look at their whole body. I mean, I just had a woman come to me and she's was having really bad menstrual pain and she had these darkest circles under her eyes. And that's a sign of, we say, kidney deficiency in Chinese medicine, which is sort of like kidneys, water energy is about reproduction. So it's like, ooh, that energy's not doing well. You know, what's going on? And
right.
Turns out she wasn't sleeping a lot. But, you know, we look at signs and symptoms of the whole body.
How do you figure all of that out? Are you doing blood work and you're doing everything?
Yeah, a lot of times, okay. You know, things that don't get diagnosed, like, for example, a woman could be really cold and tired and, you know, she's just not really getting a period. I would maybe do a blood test and look at her hormones, or a thyroid could be a culprit. Most of the time when people come to me, they've had those tests done already. But if they don't, I would like to see blood tests. It's really the marriage of Western and Eastern, right together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how did you get into this? Because I know you had your own fertility journey, if
yeah.
you want to talk about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, I had one child and I found out when I was pregnant with with my first one that I was a carrier of Tay-Sachs, which is a genetic disorder in the baby. It's fatal. And I found out, actually, my husband was a carrier. Okay. And I was like, oh, I'm not a carrier. Everything's going to be fine. And then in the beginning of my pregnancy, I found out I was a carrier. Oh. So we had to go through the testing of the baby, and it turned out my first was okay. So that was this whole sort of rude awakening.
Yeah.
And then I had a couple miscarriages and had the baby, he was okay, but I had miscarriages and I thought I was really healthy and I didn't understand and no one checked my thyroid and I went to like 3 different acupuncturists and a naturopath and nobody was really marrying the Western and Eastern, right? They kept wanting to deal with my lungs and my breathing. And so I ended up really trying to figure out what was going on for me. And then I was trying to conceive my second and I was like, same thing. I was this mad woman kind of trying to get my husband to like, I'm ovulating, honey, as the cervical mucus was coming out in the toilet. And I was like yelling for him like, hey, hey, it's time. Like, completely unsexy. Right. And sort of just thought there was a huge need to talk about sexuality, intimacy, fertility, and marry the, all of them together.
So most people aren't like, if a traditional, what's going on? People don't blend the Eastern. Their typical journeys are they're going to go to their Western doctor. They're going to say, I've been trying to conceive. And then they'll offer IVF or they'll say, I mean, what? I just feel like it's so limiting right now.
It usually is you go to your doctor and depending on your blood test and your age, there's a little bit of a fear factor, right? Like, oh no, you should start, you know, your levels don't look great. Oh no, your ovarian reserve is low. A lot of women in their 40s will tell me based on blood tests. And women get into a huge panic, which we know is really not good for fertility, right? Because it takes all the blood away from the reproductive organs and sends it into like the fight, flight, freeze mode, right? Oh no, fear. Oh my gosh. So Western doctors like OBGYNs offer up like Clomid usually. And a lot of my patients will be starting Clomid and hoping that they get pregnant with an insemination. Or they might do some tests, more testing, like to make sure the tubes are open and the uterus looks, the anatomy of the uterus looks okay. So, you know, they'll be testing and then, you know, sometimes they'll come to me and that point. It's good to have some tests. I mean, it's good to see.
But do you think there is still a place for that, right? Or would you recommend they do all that, the Clomid, or would you say try acupuncture first and try your, you know?
It kind of depends on the age, right?
Okay.
You know, so if a woman's like 30 years old and, you know, like, yeah, it's nice to see, but, you know, you can try for a year with, you know, and try natural stuff for a year without having to go to the doctor. And that's what the doctors say. So I think it's good to just try, depend on your age. If you're 40, maybe it's better to sort of get a little bit checked out, make sure that we're not, you know, the sperm is okay, right?
Like, right. Well, also, how come we don't check the sperm as much as we check women? Maybe that's happening more now, but I feel like I have to tell my friends, like, has he checked yet? When they're like, we beat ourselves up, something's wrong with me. And then sure enough.
Gosh, I'm seeing more and more male fertility right now, infertility.
Why? What do you think that's about?
I think maybe environment. I'm not really sure, but a lot of men undiagnosed, like they have low, very low, low sperm counts and nobody knows why. And I treat a lot
of
those men.
Nobody knows why. And you can treat them as well. So you're treating men and women to get safer,
Yes, both men and women.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. How about with women? Are you noticing women are having lower fertility now too?
I think women wait a little bit longer. So there's lower fertility as we age and there's a lot of panic around it. So, you know, if I think about like my grandmother, I think she in her 40s had, you know, like oopsie baby.
Yeah,
you know, my grandma and her brother were like 12 years apart, right? I think those at that time women were having babies in their 40s, but nowadays, like, you know, woman turns 40 and she has a huge panic that she won't conceive. So maybe it's age and working and environment.
Mental and emotional and all that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff.
So what are some steps though that you would say like better chances that people can take to get pregnant? Are there just some basics if people are like what shouldn't we do? What should we do? What's your like 101? Like,
I think, okay, we shouldn't smoke.
Right, no smoke. Put away. How about vape?
Vaping, no, it's not good. Vaping's not good. And okay, even cannabis. Like cannabis slows down sperm and decreases men's testosterone.
I've heard this too.
Yeah. So that's a big thing here in California, right?
Yeah. It's legal. It's everywhere.
Yeah. So that's not good for fertility. So it's
for men and for women.
For men and we don't know so much.
What about for women? What about getting us in the mood for sex?
I know. I think it's good to, I'm not sure, we don't know about, but if it's not good for sperm, it can't be good for eggs because they kind of are made.
That's true. So don't get high. Don't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah. So taking all the fun out of it,
right?
That's
fine. Yeah, that's fine. You can do that. You can do that for a while, right? What else?
Stress. I think it's a huge thing, right? The more we are fearful and panicked, the blood goes away from our reproductive organs and goes to, you know, to do the fight, flight, freeze, right?
So
You know, stress is like a big one. Getting women to relax, to really, you know, do yoga, meditate, eat well, right? You know, but I feel like the fear factor is huge because women get really panicky and then they're anxious and then it's like, honey, let's do it now. And I
well,
think
that whole thing, right? And then it's like just not sexy. And that's why I'm always like saying, like, make it sexy throughout. Like, do things that this is a great time to do a lot of the tips if you've been listening to the show that I tell you to do. Get some toys, play some games, go on vacation, even for a night, getting out of the same bedroom, like doing something different. And don't make it all about your clock ticking or your ovulating. And if you know you're ovulating, then plan something fun for that night, not just like alarms going off, get home from work. Like, yeah, even though we're all busy, I know.
I totally agree. But you know what happens sometimes for men I'm seeing is that men under pressure don't always perform. And that's what I see in my clinic, that there's like, you know, it's this time and men have to like do it this one time because they're not having regular sex, that they all of a sudden it's pressure on them and they can't get an erection.
I've heard that too. So what do you tell them? I mean, really, it's really just about sleeping well, meditation, and breathing. Don't you feel like that's just
exercise? Yeah, it would solve her problems.
Like literally it would. It would, and it does. I mean, truly, we are all so friggin' stressed out. I feel like, okay, so we talked about the diet, right? Is there a diet though that you recommend? Is it different for everybody?
I think it's different for everybody, but okay. There are some basic things like, you know, stay away from refined foods, don't drink a lot of caffeine, or don't try to really limit caffeine, don't have a lot of sugar, don't have any sugar.
No sugar?
No sugar. And there's a whole thing.
No milk duds.
No milk. No,
she was looking at my milk duds here. I love milk duds. Okay, but I'm not trying to get pregnant.
Not fertile friendly.
Right.
And eat foods as grown. Eat whole foods as grown. Probably, you know, I have vegetarian patients and, you know, I there's a lot of reasons people are vegan and I wouldn't say that's bad, but it's good to get enough protein. And,
yeah, so meats are okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like
grass-fed.
Yeah, grass-fed. And eating foods as grown and limiting refined, maybe for a lot of people, dairy is, you know, huge inflammatory food, especially women with PCOS. Like really, dairy is not good.
Okay.
So eliminating dairy and sugars and, you know, and sometimes wheat is very inflammatory. So
get all the tests, figure out what you're...
Yeah. I mean, I generally would say like wheat, dairy, caffeine, alcohol, not good. Maybe occasionally, you know, I like to use the middle way. I hate to be like, don't ever do this because then everybody's like hugely stressed. But just in general, 80% to 90% of your diet should be like really good, healthy, fertile foods. You know, put goji berries in a trail mix. Those are good for women.
I love goji berries. I always forget to get them.
Yeah, they're really good.
I love a goji berry. They're right. Okay. That's note to self. Not trying to get pregnant again, but goji berries are good for everything. They keep coming up. I feel like they do. Okay, so I know you work with Chinese medicine and Taoist practices as well as Western. So like what are the differences how would we even explain those practices to people? How do you explain them? What is the difference?
So Tantra is based on the sort of Hindu tradition. Tantra is like, Tantra is like a big thing. You know, there's Neo Tantra. But really, it's really about opening up our connection. And in Chinese medicine, it's about heart and reproductive organs. Like that's the basic thing. There's an extra vessel in Chinese medicine that connects our heart to our reproductive organs. And it's sort of like the liver energy in Chinese medicine opens to the eyes. So visually looking at your partner, right? Kissing, the heart opens to the tongue. So really making out the tongue.
Making out again, like you used to.
Yeah, it goes into the uterus. It's connected. It's like this idea. So it's really about moving energy, right? So Taoist practices are about connecting, you know, heart and uterus and connecting energy. So we're circulating our energies and we're circulating our energies with our partner. So, you know, it's just about being...
Do you teach this practice though? I know you talk about it in the book too. Like, I feel like I tried it on the show. I've talked about it a bit and I've practiced it a little bit, but I have felt that energy. Have you had sex, Taoist sex, with the connection and the energy and the flow and men with ejaculation without orgasm? And
I've done the ejaculation without orgasm, but of course, that was way back before I was trying to get pregnant. Right. And so that's a whole debatable thing. But when we're talking about fertility, it's the opposite.
It is the opposite.
They actually, it's bringing the energy from like up top, you know, and bringing it through the channels and bringing it out through ejaculating
right.
during the fertile window.
Right, right,
right, right. If a man's really exhausted when he's ejaculating and he's ejaculating too much, right? Men sometimes, you know, ejaculate too much and they're tired afterwards. And I would have them curtail around, you know, but make sure that they're on the fertile window that they
ejaculate. Do you tell the men to stop ejaculating for a while, except for when they're trying to get pregnant?
You know, I don't, because what happens with sperm, and it's really debatable from a Western doctor's point of view, from an Eastern point of view, that we want some ejaculation because it's not good to like not ejaculate.
Right.
So it's like they call it cleaning the pipes, really. Like even a man who's giving a sperm sample won't ejaculate from 2 to 4 days before the sperm sample, and then he has to ejaculate because they don't want 2 weeks. The sperm like builds up. It's
right.
not good.
Right.
So when
you're trying to conceive, you should be regularly ejaculating. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But and this would be another show, which we probably should do. About tantric sex and about, because men who get older and who aren't trying to conceive, to just kind of do the practice of just energy flow in couples. And I just love the idea of it also when you are trying to conceive, of learning to have more connected sex. Because if you learn it now, you're going to have that for your lifetime together.
It's so sad. I'll have some couples that'll be like, okay, we have 5 minutes. We have 10 minutes. We have 5 minutes. Like the woman's not even lubed. She's not, you know, it like takes all that time, right? 20 to 45 minutes to lubricate. To get aroused. And like, they're not in the mood. And the guy's like, it kills me.
I know. They're telling you this, like, we only have 5 minutes.
Yeah, I have a woman who's so stressed out right now. And she and her husband are like, they had a miscarriage and they're not doing well. And that like, they're very busy professionals and they don't have a lot of time to have sex. All the time.
So, and you can't be like, because I feel like people come to you, you must become like their sex therapist and their acupuncturist and their coach, because I feel like what I hear from a lot of couples, and I'm sure they come to your office as well, we're trying to get pregnant, but we actually have no, they probably tell you everything, we have no sex drive, I haven't really been into my partner for a while, but now I'm trying to have sex. Like, what do you do with that to get their drive back up? Like, how do you work with your patients who come to you if they're like, we haven't really been into it lately, or I've been stressed, or I'm not having orgasms or pleasure?
You know, it's so
like
complicated,
you gotta call
right?
Truth.
Like,
yeah.
Like, the women's drive is so complicated. Like, Everybody comes to my office, checks the I have no sex drive. I would say 99% of women that I work with.
And
amazing.
And tell me about the age of range of women.
I mean, I wake women in 18, to, you know, 65, 70.
And they have no sex drive. 99% check no sex drive.
No sex drive.
Jesus, I believe that.
It's crazy. So we talk about like, what is a sex drive? I try to educate them about like, what is arousal versus desire, right? That sometimes women, you know, if your partner's like, hey, let's have sex, which oftentimes happens, like women are like, ugh, I'm tired. Like, don't ask me.
Last thing on my mind.
Right. It's last thing on my mind. But arousal is like, well, if the husband or the partner, like, you know, gets a woman aroused, she might be more interested in having sex, right? It's the arousal that increases desire, right?
Exactly.
So it's giving couples more things to do together, like to all day long, like texts in the morning, you know, like all day foreplay.
Foreplay all day.
Yeah.
Foreplay starts after the last orgasm.
Exactly.
Just keep it going. I mean, I think that really works though. I mean, I feel like you have to, especially when you're trying to conceive and you already know this is going to happen. And maybe if you haven't started yet, this is a great thing to keep in mind, to work on, start having those conversations about what you guys want to try sexually, start exploring, start opening it up now, so guys are already on track. You already have a full sex life, or you already have one that you're both interested in. Because I think when couples get past all the shame and the trauma and the blaming and all that stuff, then sex becomes like their new hobby. Like, it can be a really fun thing for couples who don't get all hung up on he said, she said, and all their past traumas. If you could just kind of start today, if you're listening to this, go start talking to your partner today about your sex life and what you want to try, and that is what's going to help you have better sex.
Absolutely.
The communication part.
Absolutely. And I, you know, sometimes I do the most basic things with my couples, like, you know, like a hug, like that deep embrace body hug naked, like, or kissing, or lighting some candles, putting on some music, taking a shower together. I mean, these are like basic stuff, but people don't do that anymore.
They do it
when they met, then they don't do it anymore.
Right. They do it when they met for the first 3 months, maybe, and then everyone's trying to get back to where it was at the beginning. And it's never going to feel like it exactly like that in the beginning, but if you even just think what worked for you then, try it now. You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised at where it takes you. It might be somewhere even better than the beginning, something new and deeper, because now you guys have that connection, and you have the years, and you have the history. So I have a question, though. When people come in, you're saying, and they have a low sex drive. Now, here's the thing. It could be so many things. because it could be medications.
Absolutely.
It could be birth control pills. And I want to ask you, have you seen impacts of birth control pill on women? Because I'm really sort of obsessed with this now. There's a great, do you know Jolene Brighton? She wrote this book called Beyond the Pill, and she was on the show a few months ago. And there's been a lot coming out now about the pill. So what have you found with that, with women?
They're going off it.
They're like, why can't I get pregnant?
Yeah, a lot of times women who are on the pill for a long time, their hypothalamus, pituitary, ovarian axis gets like sliced and they don't get their periods back, and I have to really work with them to get their periods back. But I think it's like an overuse. People have been on the pill for 20 years and never went off it. It's a great birth control, so it's the best birth control we have, but it's not for everyone.
So do you tell people, so when women are on it, obviously they go off it by the time they're coming to see you, so working with you as an acupuncturist, you could help them kind of get their periods again if they're not, or start to...
Yes. It's like the acupuncture helps to reconnect the hypothalamus, pituitary, ovarian axis and get it flowing again. And sometimes I'll have to give them herbs or depending on what's going on.
I don't think it's great to hear that women just aren't getting periods.
Oh yeah, the ones who have... there's people that take the pill and never get a period. Or like the IUDs with
that?
All the stuff in them.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan unless someone has like really bad, like there's reasons too, like people who bleed continuously, like that's the Western medicine approach, as you put.
Yeah, but I think they're bleeding continuously because of underlying issues.
Yes, and obviously. I work with those underlying issues. So when they finally are to get pregnant, then I have to work to regulate their body. So
you're busy. Yeah. That's a lot with women. Well, no, it is because of the underlying issues or things they never dealt with since they were like went on the pill.
Yeah.
Right? So now they're older.
Yeah.
Okay, so then it goes, what about like medications though? What about like antidepressants and stuff that are also affecting sex drive? Like how do you mean?
Yeah, I mean I have people on SSRIs and like sometimes the men have a really difficult time ejaculating because the woman will be like, it's taking me a really long time. It's taking me so long just to get them to ejaculate. It's pressure for these couples. So in some cases men need to go off them. In some cases they don't. I think they're given out a little too much like candy.
I do too.
And where people don't really need them, they could use other things. So I'll have them work with like someone like a naturopath or somebody to help them get off, or perhaps me to do some other ways to deal with anxiety, not just SSRIs.
Okay.
Right? And there's blood pressure medication. There's a lot of things that impede sex drive and ability to perform.
Well, you must have learned so much over these 25 years too, doing it. I mean, you're also a certified sex coach, so you get this stuff. But has there been anything though? You said lately you've noticed there's a lot of low fertility in men, infertility in
young
men. Like how young?
I have like 35-year-olds, 40, I mean, 25, just women, you know, what I'm seeing right
now is
women. I have a bunch of patients now in their 20s that are premature ovarian failure, meaning they're not getting periods at all. They're not even ovulating and their follicle stimulating hormone is really high and nobody knows why. So I think there's a lot of like
food? Is it? Everyone was saying like it was milk, remember, or whatever they ate in child, you know. Or meat or chicken.
Yeah, I think it's complicated. I think there might be a lot of more autoimmune conditions these days where the body just sort of shuts down. Maybe some hidden illnesses or pathogens. It's hard to know, but they're...
So we really don't know.
We don't know.
Or like it could be unprocessed emotions as well, right?
Yes, and people who have abuse. You know, the body, like in Chinese medicine, we say the heart is really connected to the hypothalamus pituitary. And when, you know, something happens that's traumatizing, it cuts off this heart connection to the reproductive organs and maybe you don't ovulate. So trauma is a huge one.
It's huge. Where do you send people for trauma work? What kind of work have you seen to be helpful?
I interviewed a bunch of people for Conceiving with Love for trauma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's things called, brain spotting and there's EMDR.
That's what I've done lately.
But there's also like someone I interviewed for my book did this thing called havening, which is this sort of self-soothing technique where you're kind of stroking and saying things. It's again for trauma and sort of programming the brain, somatic experience. There's even like I interviewed someone for yoga that was trauma yoga, you know, where you ask permission, like if you would like to put your arm out. And I loved that.
I love that too. We have to teach more about that.
Yeah.
I
permission,
think.
Right? Consent.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we come back more with Denise Wiesner.
I work a lot with trauma.
You do, even in doing your acupuncture?
Yes.
Wow.
I work with kind of unleashing in the body because the body holds so much trauma. So I have a lot of women with vulvodynia, like pain. They can't even have intercourse. So I will work with them to sort of help the body release some of the pain.
That's amazing to me. Yeah. So, because I know that we've been talking about like pelvic floor physical therapists can help as well, but you can actually do it with acupuncture.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a team. It takes a village, right?
It does take a village. It's not just one thing, which is I realize just dealing with just other hormonal systems. Like, so you also work with women who are menopause, perimenopausal. What have you seen with that helping?
I just had a woman yesterday that came in too that was just not knowing what to do because her doctor wanted to put her on hormones and she didn't know if she wanted to be on hormones. And it's that struggle of like, do I want to be on hormones and are they bad for me? So because I'm not a doctor, I don't prescribe hormones. I'll do some natural things I really want to make sure that tissues are lubed. Like I want to make sure a woman doesn't like dry up, right? And everybody's individual in that way. So I might recommend like rose oil as a to plump up the tissues.
Okay, as like just put inside of you?
Rose
oil.
Essential oil. Heard of that. Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay, what else don't we know about our vagina? What could plump us up? What else could we use? Anything else?
I'll do rose oil. And I mean, actually, you know, using it, right? Having regular sexual, you know, getting blood flow down there. I might have women do like ovarian massage, like where they massage their ovaries, do like breathing down there, do some Kegel exercises, like plump up those tissues because they need to be used.
They need to be used. Absolutely. Masturbation.
Yes.
Do you prescribe masturbation?
I do. And I can't believe how many women like still have shame around it.
Right? So you bring it up to them, they're like, oh, no, I don't. Or they say, oh, I know I should. What do they say typically when you ask them if they masturbate?
I asked a very young woman that the other day, and she was like, no, she never did. It was like shamed in her family.
Yeah, we get that every day. I mean, we're trying to undo that. People still carry that around that it's gross, it's wrong. But men, we expect them to masturbate. It's all on the outside. But for, you know, their penis is outside, they're masturbating, they're adjusting, they're touching their penises. But for women, we're like, oh, no, shame.
No, but men have shame around it too.
Yeah,
that's
true. I have
men that are really shamed about masturbating. And it's, I don't think it's just women.
Yeah, I guess it's more like culturally, we're cool with it. And you're right, men are upset about it. I think culturally we just expect it in a way that men are going to masturbate.
Right. But
for women, yeah.
Yeah,
but then men have shame too because religion, upbringing, whatever.
Yeah.
And they still carry it. You don't think you got to check that at the door. So you must, that's what I'm saying, they must sit in there and you're like their therapist as well.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm the first person they've ever talked to about abuse that's happened to them. Like they've never talked about it or things they've never
told
anyone.
How does it come up? Like do they start feeling emotions around it? Are you asking them in their intake form?
I might ask their intake form or like, you know, what they think or it's, you know what it is? It's that I have time. I think Western doctors don't have a lot of time to talk to their patients. Everybody's in a rush to get, you know, the blood test. And so the fact that I'm asking them these questions that they're thinking about and they fill out this huge intake form, they have time. There's time. There's space and time.
Yeah.
And especially if they're trying to get pregnant, they need to explore these things because there's something in the way.
I mean, that's amazing. You've helped thousands of people get pregnant.
I've been doing this a long time.
Couples. I know, but still, it must feel amazing. Like when they call you and they're like, it's happening.
You know what? It is amazing. And then also there's a part that's hard too, because sometimes tragedy happens, right? Like a miscarriage. And sometimes like I had a woman whose baby died yesterday who came into my clinic and, you know, not everything's happy, right? Sometimes it's a lot. It's the human experience.
Going back to getting pregnant and talk about fertility, what about IVF? Like what is that process really? Like, are you working with couples? You work with them going through IVF. Can we just talk what it's like sexually speaking for the couple and then how the process. Yeah. I actually don't really know much. People don't really talk to me much about it. I understand the basics, but
I love this because I work with couples a lot going through IVF and so it becomes that they're, you know, if they're growing, women are growing follicles and they contain eggs and their ovaries get really busy.
They're busy, their ovaries are busy. I can't call you back for a month. Okay. Yeah. Can't have lunch for her. Yeah.
And they're growing them. And so a lot of women feel bloated and they're shooting themselves up and they feel distended and they probably are not the most sexual. However, because their estrogen is getting really elevated, a lot of women are more sexual and they don't know what to do. And I actually included a chapter on timing and I interviewed a bunch of doctors because they don't know when they can have sex. So let's say they can have it, but doctors don't really want the sperm when they're growing these eggs, you know, a runaway sperm before they ovulate. It would not maybe be a good thing. And so they're sort of like you can have sex up until this point. And then there's this idea that when the ovaries get too big, they can torque if you have intercourse. So I actually was like, well, what about like clitoral stimulation? What about all these other types of sexuality? Sexuality is just not penis and vagina on a date, right?
Yeah.
So I wrote a whole chapter about timing and like when you can have what. And a lot of doctors really don't know. Like they say after IVF, like bed rest, like pelvic rest, no sex, because they don't want the uterus to contract because they're afraid that it will dislodge this embryo. But the truth of the matter is there's no research to say that once an embryo is implanted, it's going to discharge.
Right.
So, you know, they say all these things, but nothing's really, there's not a lot of research about it. So it brings this question of sexuality during IVF, sort of, it's really about asking the doctor, but usually it's okay. It's usually okay, but maybe not ejaculate in the canal.
Okay.
But
yeah,
like,
what about clitoral stimulation? Yeah,
exactly. I mean, orgasm should be fine, right? Clitoral stimulation should be fine, but nobody talks about it. There's no detail that just says pelvic rest or no intercourse. But women are wondering what women don't want to ask, and they're afraid to ask their doctor, but they don't know, and so they just don't have any sex. So
which
these
isn't
poor
great
men,
for intimacy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. And so, you know, so I really wanted to bring that topic up and talk about, you know, to what you can do, that it's okay to, you know, and there's also different ways to be intimate, right? It's not like,
yeah,
you know,
what else? Yeah.
Kissing and, you know, spending time together and cooking together and really talking and touching and hugging. I mean, I think touch is so under, people don't touch. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm doing this workshop and I was like, oh, we're going to do rose petals. Like, we're going to do rose petal touch, like bringing tools into the bedroom to make it like exciting, you know, just to be touched.
You're doing the workshop, which this will come out after the show, but when the workshops that you're teaching them around the country, or are you?
I'm starting a workshop on Saturday for 2 hours at Inside LA, right around here. And I'll be doing that with some Tibetan bowl drumming, which will be
for fertility,
for sexuality, for intimacy and fertility, like exercises to help people, like breathing exercises, just to get like stimulation back down there.
We don't breathe. I always have a breathe into your pelvic floor, but how do you explain breathing to people? Because people don't breathe well. I had to relearn how, well, I never learned how to breathe. So I was breathing fight or flight. And I still do.
Right.
Sometimes when I forget to breathe. But how do you explain it?
Diaphragmatic breathing. But I actually do this microcosmic orbic practice with people.
Microcosmic orbic is the best thing I've ever heard. Yes. I don't even know what it is, but tell me.
It's basically like taking the energy and like kind of like maybe doing a little bit of like squeezing the... But this is not breathing. This is like breathing for sexuality. Sorry.
It's fine. No, right. I think that everyone listening could benefit from this.
Right. It's like, it's kind of like
your pelvic.
You're sort of doing a little bit of a Kegel and kind of getting the energy in your pelvic floor. And sometimes in Taoist practices, they might tell you to sit with like your heel with a ball pressed into your vagina, like, sorry, your clitoris, you know, just sort of to stimulate that area. And you sort of get it going. So you stimulate the energy there. And then you take the energy with the breath up the spine, inhaling and exhaling down the front of your body, down to the reproductive organs, and squeeze them a little bit. And you're like really circulating.
You squeeze it, yep.
Yeah. So breathing, I mean, abdominal breathing would be like, you know, inflating the belly as opposed to breathing up in the chest would be relaxation breath. But just this breath is really about circulating energy. So it gets people to start focusing on the connection between our whole body, not just our genitals, like that it's all connected.
Well, and I think that's really key probably to the work you do and the work that I do, is that when there is such a disconnect, that it's like our genitals are totally separate from us. We don't even want to look, and then except for when it comes time for sex. And then we're like, why isn't it pleasurable? Or why aren't I ready? It's because we're not connected. And I'm always looking for great examples to give people about breathing it. So picturing their pelvic floor. I like the thought of squeezing it, which is kind of a Taoist. Mm-hmm. I was with some guy once and we were practicing this, I remember. It was amazing. Having sex, I was like practicing, and you start to feel it. Like, you'll think it might sound so woo-woo, but like when you really visualize this and you're picturing the energy moving down into your pelvic floor and circulating it, it's like you're in it. It's connected. It's just energy.
And then couples, like if they're facing each other, can practice. This is really cool. It's really hard to describe, but they can practice breathing in. So when you do this practice, then you send the energy to your partner. And then when you inhale up your partner's spine and feel and exhale down the front, and then you inhale his energy into you. So
this
you're
is
making,
what I did, yeah.
Yeah, you're making an infinity loop with your energy. And you think, oh, that's like no big deal, but it's so powerful.
It's so powerful. If you just sit there for suspend all disbelief about it and then try it with your partner to connect again. What are some of the stories you hear from couples? Because I'm sure that you really have brought intimacy back into so many people's lives, not just babies, but also just through the, if they following your protocol, which you have a lot in your book, Conceiving with Love, which I think is a must. I'm already like buying it for three people and sending it to them today. But what you probably, you know, tell me about some of that. You probably rekindle, because they come in, they're like stressed, they're like not getting pregnant.
You know, I had a couple once where the man had so much shame around, he couldn't ejaculate in his partner. So they did IVF because he couldn't ejaculate.
Well, he just couldn't get over it?
He just couldn't release into his partner, and it happened.
Anxiety, right?
And, yeah, it happened to his first marriage. He couldn't ejaculate in her, and there was so much shame around it that they got divorced, and this was his second partner, and she was like, that's fine, we'll do IVF, right? It's not a big deal. But
then by saying the permission, he probably started, what happened?
I think it's like, no one explained to him like why this could be. Like there was no instruction of like, that happens sometimes. Men have a different kind of masturbatory style than maybe their partner's vagina can give. And so, all these techniques, but they went to the IVF doctor and the IVF doctor was like, yeah, just do an IVF. So he was carrying around this immense shame. And when we sort of released the shame from him, like, sort of like, it could be this, and, maybe you could try it with your hand, or you just ejaculate. Right. Like there's all these other ways you can do it. They had the most fun because they actually freed their sexuality.
Right.
They ended up doing an IVF and she got pregnant, but It freed, just the getting over shame is like freeing for men and women.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. But I mean, because the second you release it and you actually are vulnerable and share it with your partner that I'm actually having shame about it, well, they love you. They're with you. They're trying to have a baby with you or trying to build a life with you. It's amazing how the truth around all this could truly set you free, shame.
Or just talking about like fantasies, right? Or something that you want to do. It's like, there's so much shame. I remember going to, I went to this like dungeon and I had like this talk with somebody because I was really interested in like BDSM and just like what, that, because I wanted to write about it in my book.
Yeah.
And then afterwards we went to this little restaurant and they were all talking and I talked to this guy and I was like, because I saw it had a wedding ring. I was like, oh, does your partner know that you're into this? And he was like, oh no. Like he had this totally separate existence from, like, you know what I mean? He had a partner here and then he was doing this other thing on the side. And I thought, that's so sad.
It like, is sad to me.
Why can't we just like sort of be unafraid to say like, you know what? I really would love this. And to be able to talk about
now.
Like, yeah, let's like, dress up like this for me. And it could be so simple. Right. It doesn't have to be major, right?
Exactly. No, I mean, this is exactly. I feel like life is so short. I've got a friend of mine. He's like about to propose to someone. And I'm like, well, have you told her about, because I know him really, we've been friends forever, about how you like to, you're into, power play. He's like, oh, no, I couldn't. And I'm like, but that's such a big part of who you are. And he's like, but I don't think she'd be into it. I just feel like he's a smart guy. He's got a good life. But what, we are so afraid of just the words, of just saying it, what's going to happen, all this fear. And I'm like, you really want to walk down the aisle and close the door on them. What if she's into it? And he just couldn't. He couldn't get past it. I'm like, I don't think you should marry. You can't. Like, I get so angry and supportive in my own. I'm like, I'm angry that we are all walking around with all these big secrets that we're so afraid of sharing. And sometimes you just need permission. And that's, I guess what we're doing here.
Yeah, but exactly.
It's okay to share.
It's okay to share. And like, it doesn't have to, you can do it in, baby steps. It doesn't have to be this, like, let's try this or let's explore this or dress up like this. I mean, how much fun can that be?
So fun. Dressing up, you become another person. It's like, to me, we all like, if you like Halloween or just feeling sexy, whatever makes you feel sexy, get a few costumes, get a wig. This woman once told me she was like 80. She's like, the best sex advice is get a wig because you like look like someone else. And it makes sense. It feels really good just to not keep walking in the bedroom in the same place doing the same thing. Just like we switch up our workouts.
Absolutely.
Switch up your goddamn sex life, people. It'll be fun.
Or do it in a different place. I mean, sometimes it's like not even the, doing it in the bedroom only.
Right. Do it in the living room. Do it wherever. Do it in the kitchen. Get a hotel room for a night. I mean, do you often tell couples, do you prescribe like vacation, get out of town? Or do a lot of couples also get pregnant out of town? I would think that would happen.
It's really true. I wish it wasn't true in a way because it's such a cliche, but going away is the best thing ever for people.
If you're trying to get pregnant, just book a trip.
A vacation is so needed because couples actually, have intercourse then.
Yeah, exactly. So vacation, one night, even outside the room. What about once they have the baby and like sex is off the table for a while? What happens then when they're like, they can't really have sex. Do you see people afterwards, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a big thing. I was like thinking I should write another book.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about like the first few months. Everybody's really tired. Babies aren't sleeping. You know, men are tired too. And I think everybody's sex drive sort of plummets. But after a while, after a certain window where the baby's sleeping a little bit better, I feel like women need help because women are like usually like they're getting so much of their touch needs met. You know what I mean? Because the baby's all over them, hanging, breastfeeding, that they're just, the sex drive is really lower
for
women.
It really is.
Yeah, it really is. And so it becomes a lot of advice to women that I've heard is like, you got to do something with your husband. Like, you got to help your husband because women are, it's not like it once was, right. But it does come back.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So yeah, it does.
It does. Yes, I'm here to tell you.
It does. It does come back. And what about hormones being like a little messed up after though?
Yeah, I mean, if you're breastfeeding, you have prolactin and that sort of sometimes dries up your vagina. And so that kind of gets in the way, right? That's where lube really is important. But I think women, yeah, I think it's communication. And I think it's like sort of I think the biggest thing is tiredness. People are tired when they have kids. Like, you've been all day, if you're home with your kid, you've been all, you know, they're like all over you all day long. And then you want to go to sleep. Like, I used to say to my husband, my late husband, sleep was my first lover. Like, right. I just needed to get sleep.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Don't touch me. I gotta sleep.
I know, I get it.
Yeah. But so I think it does come back. And I think it's work. And it's about spending time. Again, it's intimacy, right? It's spending time together. It's cultivating. It's, you must get away. There must be a babysitter. There has to be time away from the baby. You have to really make that happen. Otherwise,
your kid's going to be fine.
Yeah. They have it where they, you know, people don't go away for 2 years. They're afraid to leave.
It's crazy. You got to leave. You have to.
And relationships suffer. They do.
It really does when you have the intimacy. You still have to prioritize your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's so true. Question. Is it true that women having an orgasm can increase the chance of conception? The sperm suck-up theory is what it's called.
It's a theory, so it's not been proven 100%, but there is a thinking. So you don't have to have an orgasm to conceive for sure. But there's an idea that when the sperm is near your cervix, that if you have an orgasm afterwards, it'll help the suck up the sperm. Of course, it's a theory and nothing's proven. So women who don't orgasm, you know, shouldn't feel panicked that they can't get pregnant, right? But I had a funny story where I had a same-sex couple that were getting sperm next door from, and it's in my book, next door.
Right.
And they were like having to do that sort of like the turkey baster method, right? And then one would give the other an orgasm to like get it up, which I thought was so cute.
Exactly.
Right? They said they were having the most sex ever.
It could be a clitoral orgasm, like, right? Like right after it goes in there, just
a clitoral orgasm.
Use a toy or use something.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's a theory, but why not?
I think any theory about having an orgasm is going to... I'm just telling you, I don't know what an orgasm doesn't help with. When is an orgasm a detriment?
I would agree.
Really?
Right. And we can have lots of them. We're really lucky.
We can have so many orgasms. I mean, I actually never really want to stop sometimes with my toys and things. So what about like turkey baster? Could you explain that? What is it?
You really probably wouldn't get a turkey baster, but
Use the literal turkey baster for Thanksgiving.
They do have these little like they're for intercervical inseminations. If you wanted to do them at home, you would have fresh sperm, and then you put them in this insemination tool, and then you put it up when you're ovulating. Yeah. You just sort of suck it in there if you have like fresh sperm. But when they do I inseminations from a doctor's office, they wash the sperm. So you're actually not getting the semen part of it. You're just getting the sperm part of it. And then they actually put it up you with a specific tool. That's an IUI, intrauterine insemination, different than an inner cervical insemination that you can do at home. That's kind of like the turkey baster.
Okay, got it. Then what about lubes? Lubes when you want to have a baby. People ask me it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I really want to make sure that women who are ovulating have really good cervical mucus when they're ovulating. It should be that like...
How do they know? Describe it. I know you talked about
it. It's egg white. It's like raw egg whites. And if you put it between your fingers, it stretches.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not sticky and, you know, tacky. I mean, it's amazing how many women don't know what their cervical mucus means.
No.
It's amazing. So, but anyway, it happens before you ovulate. And the sperm can live in this mucus because because it's more alkaline. It makes the vagina a little bit more alkaline, right? The vagina is mostly acidic. So it makes it alkaline. The sperm can live in it. And so when women start to get the cervical mucus, it's a great time to begin intercourse. So some women, if they've had like injuries, like they've had, you know, sort of cervical, some of their cervix removed, may not make as much cervical mucus. In that case, a lube might be really good. And you want to use a lube that's, there is FDA approved lubes to use specifically for that window when the sperm becomes more alkaline.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, but you know, and some doctors say like things like coconut oil. There's a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of research. So it gets to be like,
there isn't a lot of research on getting all the stuff for women.
Yeah. There's so, you know, sort of like some people say coconut oil is okay. Some people are like, no, that's not good. It's confusing. I had a urologist say that vegetable oils were okay, but
no,
yeah.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah. But I think it's important if a woman's not making her cervical mucus to make sure that, you know, really she's, there's enough foreplay that she's aroused, because women should get wet.
Did we get into your foreplay chapter, or did we skip it? Didn't we talk about earlier we were going to get into foreplay?
It's 20 to 45 minutes. That's the most important thing. 25
Just
minutes of arousing
it.
Women.
It's going to help you.
Women are shocked when I tell them this. It's amazing, because that never happens.
Ever happens. And then we wonder why we don't want to have sex. We have a low sex drive.
Yes.
We need it. Well, that's my side. There, I usually have one that said foreplay is not just a suggestion; it's a requirement. We're not just like, "Oh, it'd be nice." Like, we require it.
Yeah.
For pleasure, for orgasm, for conceiving.
Yes.
Do you give women also like beginning like masturbation tips? It's like you have the art of self pleasuring, but I don't know, what are some things if they're feeling weird about it, and men too, like they.
I have, for self-pleasuring, I do a breast massage thing, because women should like touch their breasts. It's very arousing to touch your breasts.
I know. Explain that to our
listeners? I mean, I'll have women get some, you know, oil and start massaging, like special aromatherapy, and start massaging their breasts, because it's really good for their breasts to massage them, right? And also, you know.
Why is it good for their breasts?
Because it stimulates the tissue. I mean, it's tissue in our breasts, like any tissue. It's like we want
to,
you know.
We don't think to touch them. Sometimes, and also in relationships, sometimes you find like your partner was really into your breasts, and they forget about them, and then nothing happens, and
they forget about them.
I thought you liked my breasts.
What happened
You're
to my breasts?
Skipping right over.
Yeah, exactly. But the stimulation's really good. It's also very arousing, right? So so I think I had a tantra teacher once that said, like, for men, sexuality is their penis, but for women, starting out, it's their breasts.
Yes.
So foreplay for women, for sure, breasts, but massaging, breast massage is super good with oils for women just to do on their own.
Yeah.
And then it's arousing, and then hopefully it's getting some kind of juices flowing, and then they can do a little bit of touch and exploration around, you know, how does their clitoris like to be touched? Does it like to be, you know, I had a woman yesterday that was like, I don't like my clitoris touched. I don't like oral sex. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. And I was like, well, I wonder, you know, what her anatomy's like. Like, maybe her clitoris is way too sensitive and her partner is like touching it too aggressively.
Well,
and
exactly.
That's like, maybe needs to go around the hood a little bit and not go directly on the clitoris.
Or just on the labia, or on the pubic mound,
just
go into it. Or maybe if she's really aroused, it'll be less so.
Exactly.
Right.
But I don't think she knows that. So like, she's got to have to. So one of my things for her is to like find out by yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't think she ever masturbated before. Yeah. So
gosh, women, we got to get on the masturbation train. And I love what you're saying about what kind of essential oils should we rub into our breasts?
You know what?
I want to go do that now.
Yeah. I actually had a thing. There's a lot of one that I have in my book and I don't know by my heart, but,
okay.
But there's, I think there's like some frankincense, and then there's like, I mean, there's lots of stimulating oils for aphrodisiac, like rose oil. Sandalwood is good. Rose geranium.
That's a good one too.
Yeah.
And I just love what you're saying about the breasts, because I think for a lot of women who feel like they try to masturbate or they don't want to, I think just starting with your breasts could also be just a great gateway and less threatening, maybe.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, so I'm not going to make you orgasm it, but just for tonight, just massage your breasts and then see if it gets you in the mood for masturbation. It's such a good way of describing it.
Like,
Yeah, I like it too. Thank you. Well, you said it. Now I'm taking it. It's amazing. What about sexy foods? People are saying, is aphrodisiacs a real thing, Emily? What about it?
Well, there's aphrodisiacs like herbal medicine, which I do a lot of in my practice.
Okay.
Like, just really to help like hormones, and they're really good. I mean, horny goatweed is one of them, right?
Yeah.
I think they gave it to goats in the fields and noticed they were having more sex.
It's real.
But sexy foods, I mean, like chocolate. dark chocolate, right? It's got so many good things for you, and it's great. I mean, not too much, but it is. And I mean, I talked about some in my, like, the goji berries, but pumpkin seeds, or, you know, even oysters. I mean, it's cliche, but they actually are. They contain zinc, and zinc is great for erections and for women, for fertility. So they are sexy.
Let's have a sexy dinner and make some
chocolate
asparagus.
Asparagus. Well, I think that's the old wives' tale, and asparagus. I put it in because a book I read was talking about, like, how they used to think it was sexy.
Garlic.
Right.
Pineapple.
Well, garlic increases, you know, it increases blood flow, right? Because garlic, it opens up the blood vessels, and that's what we want for, you know, not only for an erection, but for our clitoris.
I think that's really important. So you tell couples, you send them home with, like, recipes, like, add garlic.
You know what? I usually do a fertile, we should do like a sexy food for pregnancy book.
You should.
Right?
Yeah. There's a lot of spinoffs.
Yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah.
But I'll do a fertility friendly and have them do fertility friendly foods, which are really good for you. I mean, you know, garlic is like, you know, I say it in my book because it increases blood flow, but like, I know, I think, it doesn't always go agree with the breath.
I know.
Right?
I don't love garlic. But
yeah, I don't either.
No, I try to avoid it.
And onions.
No, same.
Yeah, I don't like onions and garlic.
No,
yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, thank you so much, Denise, for this. I love it. Curebook is Conceiving with Love, a whole body approach to creating intimacy, reigniting passion, and increasing fertility. And I really think that there's just a lot of inspiration here about truly reconnecting, reigniting passion, all of that. Great tips. Oh. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Buy your book. People can find you at denisewiesner.com.
Yes.
WIESNER. And then where else would you like to send them?
My Instagram is Denise Wiesner, LAC. And I think that's my Facebook as well. And then if you want my clinic, there's naturalhealingacupuncture.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here. And I have 5 questions that I ask my guests. Yes. Here you go. Ready? Yes. All right. Biggest turn on?
Oh, my biggest turn on is like looking my partner in the eyes and light touch. Really. Same. I like the eye contact. Yeah.
Biggest turn off?
Honey, do you want to have sex tonight?
Exactly. I think we can all relate to that. How would you describe your sex life or your relationship life in 3 words? You can pick.
Heart, mind, love.
Something you would tell your younger self about sex.
Have fun. Enjoy yourself. Exactly. Experiment. Yes.
Number 1 sex tip.
Be a sexual adventurer.
Okay. Thank you so much, Denise,
for being
here.
Thank you so much.
Here.
Thank you.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to subscribe to the podcast. We love when you review it wherever you listen. And thanks for sharing this with a friend. And thanks to my amazing team, Ken, Kristen, Michelle, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.